on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, January 9th, 2025 edition. Still weird saying that. I don't know why. Trading is underway for the year of 2025, and you may twist and turn a bit as it works through the coming or changing dynamics that are inevitable with a new administration, especially this new administration. And we'll keep you abreast of the trends that emerge. And that's ultimately what will be important, is not about the rhetoric of what one politician says or one member of the cabinet says, or really what anyone says. It's really you have to let the market kind of do the talking for you, because ultimately it's the wisdom of the crowds that will start to allocate capital based on what is truly going to happen with this new administration. So that's what we're here to help you navigate in these choppy waters. And that's what we have kind of entered over the past month or so. Are definitely choppy waters in the equity markets and risk markets. So I'm Justin Klein, and our objective here is to help you through this period so that you can make smart decisions with your money, give you the tools, the mindset, so that you aren't making decisions based on emotions, but decisions based on the facts on the ground. This takes a lot of data, which will give you plenty, as well as perspective with understanding how markets and economies evolve in these challenging times. Now, first off, before I get to our first caller question, I want to say my heart goes out to everybody just north of me in LA area. A lot of devastation there. And I just got a call from my cousin who lives up in West Hills in the Valley, and there's a new fire starting there. So I may be housing a cousin, a family member or two tonight here down in Orange County. So hopefully the fires and the winds calm down, and I hope everyone finds solace and safety in these challenging times. Now, we're going to talk about the market performance. Well, we won't talk about the market performance because there's no market movements today. We also had the market close today due to the funeral of former President Carter. And so we won't have that, but we will run down the show topics in just a bit. But first, let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, this is Andrew from New Hampshire. I'm curious on your take on Adobe. Caught my attention where it had a downdraft in the stock price due to earnings not meeting expectations. But valuation, to me, seems like it might be a good time to jump in. Would love your perspective. Thanks.
All right, looking at Adobe, and this is down pretty dramatically from its 52-week high, which is at $638. Now we're down to $419, down 34% from its 52-week high. But making a lower high from where it was in December of 2021 at over $700 per share. So the general trend since then is lower, and I think the multiples are coming down as well, and starting to become a bit more reasonable when it comes to its valuation. But still elevated. You have price to sales around 9. That's typically pretty extended. Enterprise valued EBITDA is around 22, which isn't near its lows of what it typically bottoms out closer historically to in the low teens, call it. And we're still at 22. So I still think there's some potential downside. I like that you are looking at a company like this that has a good economic moat, good profitability, and is certainly a good business. Return equity at 37%, free cash flow at $7.8 billion, but it's still $184 billion market cap. So you're not talking about a very strong free cash flow yield, still under 2%. And I would want that probably closer to 4%, 4-5% for me to be excited to jump into this name. So I like what you're looking at, but the technicals and the fundamental and the valuation still leaves a lot to be desired. You know, it is at now near a 52-week low. Actually, yeah, it is at a 52-week low pretty much. And so I think this doesn't find support until about 375, 360 in that range. That's where I might start a position, but I wouldn't be buying it quite yet because I do think it does get down into the mid-300s. And at that level, that's where I would be interested to start. But ultimately, I don't think it's a true value until it gets below 300 per share. So still ways to go. I like that it's on your watch list, but I'd be patient on Adobe. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we'll hit all of it. And our main focus point concerns this question. Is a high-yield savings account still worth it? Despite recent Federal Reserve rate cuts, these accounts still provide roughly a 4% yield, significantly outperforming a typical savings account. And we'll look at what to expect as we move through 2025 and how it stacks up to other investments, other asset classes. We have some other topics on the docket as well. We'll talk a little bit about creative destruction and whether that is improving or on the decline here in America. And then the debt ceiling fight that is likely to be handled by President-elect Trump and his administration. And so we'll look at the variables there. We also will tackle your voice bank calls. One is on Realty Income and the other is on RSUs. Also have some questions that came in from the comments section over on our YouTube channel as well. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART.
Okay, got to get serious with my finances. I've been working a long time, and I know there's still got to be more that I can do to build my wealth quicker. I don't want to have to work forever.
If you are not maximizing your employer-sponsored retirement plan, KPP Financial can help. With our professional oversight, you can potentially enhance your investment performance by an average of 3% annually. At KPP Financial, we provide a comprehensive 401k management program designed to optimize your retirement savings. Our approach includes creating custom investment allocations tailored to your goals and risk tolerance. That can make a big difference in your favor.
Maybe it's time to tune up my retirement plan.
For more information on how you can take control of your retirement savings, visit our website, kppfinancial.com.
KPP Financial. Sounds good.
Every time a new year rolls around, I admit, I do spend some time thinking about what I can do better. And of course, I start by making several New Year's resolutions. I mean, this is how you set goals, right? Okay, but resolutions can feel daunting, especially when they're important, like creating a will or trust. I've been through this process, and I will tell you that trust and will makes creating your will easy. Like lounging on the couch easy. And right now, you can get 10% off at trustandwill.com/invest. There are many benefits to estate planning, especially the peace of mind you will enjoy knowing your assets and wishes are secure. Trust and Will is designed by attorneys, but customized by you. The website is simple to use, and the process is straightforward. Each will or trust is state-specific, legally valid, and customized to your needs. Trust and Will has an overall rating of excellent, plus thousands of five-star reviews. Check off one of your goals early this year with Trust and Will. Protect what matters most in minutes at trustandwill.com/invest and get 10% off, plus free shipping. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/invest.
Invest Talk. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now. 888 888- 99Chart.
Hey, how's it going? This is Justin calling from Okinawa, Japan, and I'm calling about Realty Income, ticker symbol O. I'm looking at building a position to supplement income just for the coming years, and like how it's grown its dividend over the past 30 years, so it doesn't feel like a chasing yield or anything like that. But I do see that the principal is down 11% over the past 52 weeks and 27% down the last 5 years, so well below its moving averages. I'm not sure if it's a good support level or just a concerning downtrend. So higher interest rates, I know, and higher for longer talk is not helping. Just calling to get your opinion on that. Also, the PE ratio being 50 seems kind of ridiculous, so maybe you can shed some light on that as well. Any insight would be a great Happy New Year to you both, and I look forward to your input as always.
All right, looking at Realty Income. This is a REIT that mainly owns retail properties. Talking about regional and national retail chain operators, 50 states. It's one of the largest REITs that is out there. I'm not seeing what you're saying with forward with P ratio around 40. Remember, looking at funds from operation, which this year expected to be $4.39, up from last year's full year expected to be $4.16, and it's a 52.50 at the close today. Closed yesterday, right? Market wasn't open today. But you know, that's you know, low teens multiple. I have no issue with that on the valuation front. Really, I think the worry is just more the type of properties that they own. Now, the good thing is most of these are freestanding, single tenant, triple net lease properties, which means that you're talking about McDonald's, Starbucks, really tenants that are large and strong. And so, and in strip malls and things like that. And those that tend to be better than, you know, the big malls. So I like the type of retail space that they own, even though retail generally is weak. Now, they have started to add industrial, gaming, office, manufacturing, and distribution properties as well. So starting to diversify a bit, which I like that. But the issue, the biggest issue is the overall trend in the stock, and especially compared to the rest of the REIT industry, certainly has been much weaker. And so I don't like the chart. I think this is likely headed lower. It is showing a bearish pattern. But this gets back into the mid to low 40s, excuse me. Now it's at 52. That's an area that I would pick up Realty Income. So what I would do, maybe sell some cash secured puts down at those levels. I think that's a good idea on this type of name. But definitely a solid REIT. I wouldn't be doing it because of the yields. I would be doing it because of the type of properties that they generally own. In fact, they are beginning to diversify their business a bit more. So for that reason, I would continue to have my watch list, but I probably wouldn't buy it until it gets to the mid-40s. Thanks for the call. Now we have, you probably noticed that we have answered questions submitted via our YouTube channel, and these are questions that are put in the comments section. So let's handle one of those now. Rowdy 1345678 says, "Hey, InvestTalk, what do you think of HIG? I would like to sell puts at 100. What do you think?" So this is Hartford Financial Group, and this is actually a name that we own for clients. HIG is the symbol. And what does Hartford Financial Group do? They offer group life, group disability, property, and casualty insurance products here in the U.S. So well-diversified. Earnings in 2017 were $2.74. Last year, for full year, once they announced Q4, expected to be $10.01. And this year, full year, expected to be $11.62. So basically, we like it, right? We like that trend in earnings, just a very strong, just strong business with good profitability. Return equity is 19%, not growing dramatically. You look at revenue growth last quarter, 9%. And over the last couple of years, it's kind of averaged around that 10% rate. But profitability last year was up 13%. The year before that was up 17%. This year, profitability is supposed to be up 16%. So, you know, this is one of those names where it's not growing 30, 40, 50% and not super exciting business, but it's a consistent business that continues to grow. And we really like those. And you're talking about $109 stock. It's supposed to make $11 next year or this year, excuse me, plus. You're talking about a single-digit forward-looking P/E ratio. We like that. With a strong return on equity, with a strong balance sheet. There's just so much to like here, and that's why we own it. Price to book is only at 1.9 times. Enterprise value to EBIT only at 4 times. So just a strong value. I would selling puts at 100. I think that's a pretty good idea. Thanks for the question. 8899 chart, 8899-242-78 is how you get through and ask your question on this show or leave a message for a future show. Now, we're going to head into a short break in just a minute. And on the other side, we're going to touch on interest rates and high yield savings accounts. So many people have parked money into money markets, high yield savings accounts, etc. But the Fed has started to ease and lower rates. And that has impacted the yields you've seen on these type of investments. And they underperformed last year and the year before equities, things like that. So is it still a good idea, even if they're underperforming other types of assets and the yields continue to head lower and are likely to head lower throughout this year? So that's what we'll talk about on the other side of this break. Still to come. We'll finish my focus point and more answers to your questions. And of course, you can call me right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7 for your finance and investment questions.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk, now with more than 60 million downloads. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are ready to answer your finance and investment questions 24/7, 888-99-CHART.
Now, as I said before the break, our main focus point is about the fact that high-yield savings accounts the yields are falling. We know the Fed has cut rates a few times as we closed out 2024, and there still is a decent chance they'll cut 1, 2, maybe 3 times this year, and that will ultimately, once again, feed into the yield you're going to get on super safe short-term investment vehicles like high-yield savings accounts. Now, right now, you can still get about 4% on a high-yield savings account. That's much higher than roughly 43 basis points that you're getting on the average savings account. You know, I think Chase is still paying 1 basis point to savings accounts. And so it just makes a lot of sense if you're trying to park safe cash into these type of vehicles. Now, there are other options, though, as well. Now, they can be a bit more complicated, a little more difficult to access, but really not that hard, especially for those that, you know, have brokerage accounts, have investment accounts already set up somewhere, whether that's at Schwab or Fidelity or E-Trade or some broker. You can go buy treasuries. We do that for clients that are, you know, we're trying to get the best yield on cash, and we're not trying to take any much duration risk or much credit risk. Buy treasuries directly. And, you know, you can still get short-term treasuries yielding in the high fours. Okay. And so that's something that you have to consider if you have those type of taxable accounts. Remember, the interest on treasuries is state tax free. So that's another benefit as well, especially if you're in a high tax state. You know, the current Fed funds range is right around 4.25. And so you can get treasuries, like I said, in the short term, kind of right around that mid fours. And so higher than the four you're going to get on a lot of high yield savings accounts, but still pretty healthy, right? And still down from where we were just a few months ago. Now, you can also buy ETFs. There are ETFs that invest in treasuries as well. It's another simpler way, especially if it's a lower dollar amount. Remember, if you're buying a bond, you need $1,000 to buy one bond. And so if you're only trying to put a few hundred dollars together to work, ETFs can be helpful as well. There's a lot of good, very, very short-term, low-duration treasury bond ETFs still yielding around that 4.5% rate. So you can pick up a little bit extra yield by entering the treasury market. Now, what you have to remember, though, is that anything that's short duration, like a high-yield savings account, like short-term T-bills, the rate's variable, meaning it can go up and down based on Fed policy. And you've already seen that with a lot of these, including Goldman Sachs and Apple, cutting the rate that they're paying on their cash that you deposit with them. And so the question comes, do you want to take some duration risk? We've talked about not taking a lot of duration risk, you know, buying TLT, for example, right? 30-year treasury bonds. You don't want access. You don't want exposure to that. But do you want to go out maybe a year or 2 years, maybe up to 3 years? And then you can buy CDs. You can buy what we do for clients. We buy corporate bonds yielding much, much more. You're taking some credit risk there. But I still think in some instances, that's a good idea as well. So a lot depends on your time frame. You know, if you don't need the money in the next, call it 3 to 6 months, you know, going out and buying a little bit longer duration in CDs or bonds, that can make sense as well. Now, if you get beyond, say, the 5-year mark, then you want to start thinking more about riskier investments, whether that's real estate, whether that's equities, commodities, etc. That's where you have time horizon to see through volatility. And that's ultimately what we try to do with our clients when we're breaking down their financial plan, building out where their money should be allocated, you know, retirement money, longer term, obviously. But it's usually a 3 to 6 month number of their 3 to 6 months of expenses that should be in some sort of super safe investment, like a high yield savings account, like short-term T-bills, et cetera. And then we allocate money for that. Beyond that, that emergency fund, that's once again when you should start taking a bit more risk. Now, one thing you have to realize is that typically, even though it sounds good, high yield savings account, you know, 4% sounds a lot better than we're getting, you know, just a handful of years ago, it's still not performing as well as other assets. And in many instances, depending on your lifestyle, it may not be keeping up with inflation. And so you could be eroding your purchasing power, even though it looks good nominally, 4% yield, it still may not be keeping up with inflation, especially if inflation reaccelerates, which we're getting signs of that as we begin 2025. And so make sure you're not storing too much money in these high yield savings accounts. Make sure you consult with your financial planner, financial advisor, even your CPA and tax advisor to figure out which is the best account for you that fits your overall financial plan. If you don't have one and your financial life is a bit more complex, where you have a home, you have maybe dual income, you have kids, you have IRAs and 401ks, this is a situation where you probably want to build out a financial plan and have a path forward, know what things are going to look like in 3, 5, 10 years, so you can know how much you should allocate to those high yield savings accounts versus more risky assets like equities. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question: real estate versus stocks, which is a better investment? Investors face a crucial decision when choosing between real estate and stocks to grow their wealth, and we'll unpack that story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Can you believe it's 2025 already? Life moves pretty fast, and starting a new year always reminds me of that. Are you prepared for the unexpected? Fabric by Gerber Life helps you get term life insurance in minutes so you can help protect your family's financial future. Fabric was designed for busy parents like you, and it's more than life insurance. Free digital wills, access to investment accounts to invest for your kids' future, and more. Fabric by Gerber Life is term life insurance you can get done right from your couch, all online and on your schedule. You could be covered in under 10 minutes with no health exam required. If you got kids, and especially if you're young and healthy, The time to lock in low rates is now. Even if you have life insurance through your employer, it may not offer enough protection for your family, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. Fabric has flexible, high-quality policies that fit your family and your budget. Like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. Fabric has partnered with Gerber Life, trusted by millions of families like yours for over 50 years. There's no risk, and there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. And you can cancel at any time. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to help protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/investtalk. That's meetfabric.com/investtalk. meetfabric.com/investtalk. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
InvestTalk. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now, 888-99-CHART.
I've got a question for you. This is Craig from the mountains outside Seattle. I am cash flowing a shop on my property that's going to cost about $150,000. I've already got about 80 of it cash flowed without having to cash anything out, but I intended to cash out investments for it anyway. So my question is, I've got about $70,000 in RSUs through my work, and I've also got about $300,000 in a brokerage account. My thought is to use the RSUs first, since they're already part of my adjusted gross income and parts have already been pulled out for taxes. I just want to know if that's the right approach. It should cover the rest of the build without having to touch my brokerage. So just wondered your thoughts on that and if I'm thinking the right way or if I'm missing something. Thanks so much.
Well, that depends on the broad exposure of your investments. It's hard for me to say because I don't know what company the RSU is on. I don't know what the other brokerage account looks like. You know, is that a large percentage, $70,000, a large percentage of, well, you said you had $300,000 elsewhere. So, you know, that's not a dramatic allocation, but is that all the liquid assets that you have? I'd imagine you might have 401ks, other investment accounts as well. So $70,000 doesn't seem like a lot, but you know, maybe you're overweight to that industry itself. And then you have to ask, you know, is that the right position that you want to cut? I would just look at that as like a part of the your overall positions within your taxable investment accounts. So, you know, if you want to run a portfolio review, I encourage you to head over to our website, investtalk.com, and complete that. And we can kind of talk about it. What makes sense for you and these RSUs and what you need this cash for. So, you know, it's always hard to give specific advice without looking at that big picture. It's obviously what we do for clients, it's what we do on our portfolio reviews. And so I would encourage you to complete one of those so that I can give you a more specific answer. Thanks for the call. Now let's talk a little bit about the debt ceiling that is coming up. And there, the Republicans really have the power here in the debt ceiling fight. And but it's part of many priorities that they have, from tax cuts, right? With the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act from 2017 expire this year. And certainly that bleeds into the debt situation and the broader fiscal situation as a country. There's the border. There's energy policy and potential spending cuts with DOGE. And, you know, I think the other question, that was actually a emergency fire warning on my phone. So basically, you know, they have a lot on their plate, and a debt ceiling will prevent them from enacting a lot of their priorities. And so the big question is, once again, this is infighting within the Republican Party. Some are very fiscally conservative, a traditional Republican, whereas others, maybe on the MAGA side, maybe would like to see spending cuts, but they want still spending on the border, for example. They still want tax cuts, okay, for the middle class. So they each have their priorities. And there's infighting, and ultimately there needs to be an agreement in addition to raising the debt ceiling. And then the question is how much? How much do they raise the debt ceiling? Is it just to kick the can down the road a couple of years? Is it to kick the can down the road to the next administration, which may be a Democratic administration potentially, right? You don't know what happens after Trump's final administration. Or do they get rid of it altogether? And there are some, both on the left and the right, that are all for that. Because remember, this was actually put in by Congress back in, what year was that? I believe it was the 60s, if I remember correctly. Yeah, because basically before, Congress had to separately approve each Treasury debt issuance. And what they created the limit right before World War II, that's what it was, right before World War II, to make debt management easier. But keep the legislature involved with trying to cap the deficit, right? The red ink. And so since then, it's really been kind of a general easy issue to get through, except until 2011. That's really when the fight started over the debt ceiling. And so how effective is it really? It's not really, because this is ultimately, it's not an effective tool that is forcing Congress to cut spending. It hasn't been, despite the political football that it's been. So I think there's, once again, more political brinksmanship here. But what you have to understand when it comes to how this impacts the equity markets or the asset markets in general, a lot of people will think, oh, if we hit the debt ceiling, that's bad. Well, in the long run, if we do default on our debt, yeah, sure, that would probably be very bad. But in the near term, it's actually net positive for liquidity. Why is that? Is because when the Treasury issues debt, they are pulling dollars out of the system. Okay. Now, they counteracts that by taking those dollars and going and spending them, right? That's why they need to issue debt, is because they need to go and spend. Now, when they issue that Treasury debt, it goes into what's called the Treasury General Account, like the Treasury's checkbook. Okay. So what happens in the debt ceiling when they hit it is they can no longer issue debt, means they can't pull any dollars out of the system, but they are continuing to spend out of the Treasury General Account. And the Treasury checkbook, Treasury General Account, starts to draw down, and dollars are going out into the system without any dollars being pulled out of the system either. So that is net positive for liquidity. So that's actually one of the probably strongest arguments for a first half of 2025 being generally a good time in markets. It's probably the best argument because of the new administration, where there's a lot of uncertainty and markets don't like uncertainty, but what they do like is liquidity. And the liquidity situation remains positive. It's been choppier as of late, and you're seeing that kind of in asset markets. But a debt ceiling being hit and the fight being dragged out means a Treasury General Account will be drawn down, and that will be net positive for liquidity in the short term. But once that is hit, once they come to a resolution, which they always do, what happens next? They start to issue debt, refill the Treasury General Account, and they pull now more money out of the system than they're spending in. And that it would be actually net negative, and it would start to balance out. So those are kind of the idiosyncrasies that you, us as professionals, we kind of understand and have to monitor. But I wanted to hopefully explain that to you so you can know how to react to these headlines. A lot of times it's counterintuitive, counter to what you expect would happen in markets. Now we've got time here, so let me drop another question from the Invest Talk YouTube channel. Shane Jacobson says, hey, Invest Talk, could you please go over Cameco, CCJ, and Uranium Energy Corp, UEC, UEC. Let's pull that up here. Now, Cameco, most of you know, we've owned for clients for some time. It's trading around $51 per share at the close yesterday. But UEC, and for everyone, CCJ, Cameco, is a Canadian company. It's one of the largest uranium miners in the Western Hemisphere. But uranium energy, this also is a uranium miner. And it has properties in Texas, Wyoming, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, and Paraguay. Much smaller, $3 billion market cap versus Cameco at $22 billion. And the earnings are just finally positive for UEC. They're at least expected to be this year. They lost money last year, lost money the year before. They made a little bit, 2 cents in 2022, but supposed to make 16 cents this year. It's a $7 stock. So, you know, it's much smaller, not nearly as profitable. Let me take a look at the balance sheets of UEC. I haven't looked at that. Let me pull that up on another system. Yeah, good balance sheet. Yeah, no long-term debt, so that's good. But the free cash flow is negative. Okay. And I'm just going to easily pull up a ratio. CCJ to UEC. And over the long term, Cameco has outperformed, especially since 2022. And it's starting to outperform once again. I rather own the larger, more diversified name with good cash flow. It also, Cameco bought a, was it Westinghouse, if I remember correctly? And so they have a little foot in the nuclear power game as well. So it's not as much of a pure play uranium miner as it once was, but obviously still the majority of their revenue comes from that. So I much rather own Cameco over UEC, and that's why we do for clients and have for some time. Thanks for the question. There comes another caller question that came in earlier from Michigan.
Jacob from Michigan here, wondering what you think about MRO, that's Marathon Oil. Thank you so much.
All right, looking at MRO, it's an independent exploration and production company, primarily focused on unconventional resources in the United States. MRO. Where are my charts? Other charts aren't being pulled up. Did this get bought out? Yeah, I think this one. I think Marathon. Yeah, Conoco bought Marathon. And so we like Conoco. So I'd much rather own, Marathon. Like I said, Conoco bought Marathon. And so of the large independent E&P companies out there, Conoco is definitely one of our favorites, has a lot of exposure to natural gas. And so we give Conoco a thumbs up. Now, as we move through the first couple weeks of 2025, I want to remind you that this is going to be a year that looks different than last year. It's a new market environment. So we have a new administration. We have inflation starting to reaccelerate. We have interest rates rising once again. And it brings me back to what we've been saying for a little while. We are in a secular inflationary environment. We are in a populist environment. That means that the trends pre-COVID are no longer there. In many ways, the economy has changed. Some good, some bad. And some sectors are likely to do better over the next decade than others. And so the question for you is, are you prepared for this new market environment, for this inflationary environment that is new to anyone that didn't live the 60s and 70s and earlier? This is actually more akin to the 40s and 50s. If you're looking at the structure of the economy with the debt, right, kind of post-World War II and the inflationary environment. So if you need help and you need guidance through these times, I encourage you to reach out to my company, KPP Financial, where we practice parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients. And we operate the same philosophy, both on and off air, which is independent thinking and shared success. We want to bring you along with our success. And we want to give you unbiased guidance, both on and off air. So I encourage you to take advantage of our free portfolio review assessments by heading over to investtalk.com. And we can set up a Zoom meeting. So we can share screens, I can run reports on your particular situation and see if it aligns with your goals, your risk tolerance level, and most importantly, the current market trends. Now, this is Invest Talk, now with more than 60 million downloads, thanks to you, and our work continues in 30 seconds, so hang on.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future.
Would this be an opportune time to get into annuities?
Everyone's situation is different.
Get your thoughts on CRM, Salesforce.
And so are their questions.
And I was just calling for your assessment of Blackstone Incorporated.
24/7, rain or shine, InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. 888-99-CHART.
I wanted to see what your thoughts were on industrial REIT STAG Industries, ticker symbol STAG. We're looking to get some exposure. Wondering if you could take a look and maybe give me a good entry point. Thank you. Bye.
Ooh, let's take a look at STAG. It's a name that has been in a recent downturn, but a lot of that has to do with the sector as a whole, the REIT sector, because they're bond proxies and they tend to fall when bond prices fall and interest rates rise. And that's what you've seen lately, especially since the election. Now, STAG is an industrial REIT, about $6 billion market cap. It owns 569 single-tenant industrial properties in 41 states, so fairly well-diversified there. About a 4.5% yield currently. Last quarter, sales were up 6%. Funds from operation, though, were down 18% for the full year 2024. Funds from operation expect to be up 5% and then another 4% this year. So kind of a steady grower, low to mid single digits. I think that's fine. It's not exciting, but certainly the type of properties, frankly, I like. I like industrial REITs. I think there's we have some great strengths here in the United States. And one of that is the diverse economy that we have, from high tech to finance, to entertainment, to industrial companies, from warehouses to distribution centers, et cetera. And that's where STAG tends to operate in. And it has come down. It is into some support here and around the, what are we at, $33.30 at the close. And they have, once again, a good balance sheet. Let me look at its enterprise value to EBITDA is right around 15 times, which is kind of the middle part of its range over the past 10 years. So I would say it's now fairly valued after this decline and into some support. So it's a starter position here. I wouldn't mind it, but I wouldn't go all in at these levels. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and we have one goal here: to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's talk a little bit. Actually, let's fit in another caller question. S. Danko, 95, says, what are your thoughts on UFPI? UFPI, I bought this earlier this year at 125 and was up a nice amount, but within the past month, stock is down 90%. Now, well below my cost basis, it looks as though support now is this holder. Should I cut my losses? Ooh, this is an interesting one. UFPI. Manufactured lumber, composite wood, and other building products, the retail, industrial, and packaging industries. Yeah, earnings are expected to be down 15% full year 2024. And this year, supposed to earn $7.31, but that's down from nearly $11 in earnings in 2022. And I think that's the issue, as analysts continue to see this name of, see the earnings for this year, expectations come down. You had last quarter revenues down 10%, earnings down 22%. And that looks to continue at least in the first half of this year. But net in the back half, you should see some reacceleration. But remember, the farther out the analysts are looking, the less accurate they tend to be. And I do agree that this is worrisome. This recent move down in the stock, huge reversal, wide-ranging reversal bar last month of December. If I go to a yearly chart, yeah, that's not a good look there. I would move on. I don't think the valuation is particularly attractive, to be honest with you. There's just the multiples are just too high for a business that is struggling, you know, with sales growth. And, you know, the good thing is they do have a good balance sheet, but I am afraid that cash flow and earnings are headed lower. So I'm going to say, move on, take your small loss and find something with a much better chart and fundamentals. Thanks for the call, or thanks for the question, excuse me, submitted via our YouTube channel. Now, lastly, let's talk about creative destruction. And this is one of the terms my grandfather was one of the early terms he taught me about. And it was popularized by an Austrian economist, Joseph Schumpeter, in the 1940s. And it has roots actually in Hinduism, where in Hinduism, it says creation and destruction are considered two parts of a trifecta of equilibrating cosmic forces. And in general, Schumpeter said, creative destruction is central to long-term economic growth and allows resources, capital, and people to be deployed efficiently, effectively. And you would say that is live and well here in the United States. And I would say, yes, in some parts of the economy, that's true. Silicon Valley, for example, I think there's some good evidence there. But if you zoom out, it's not as obvious. If you look at things like job entry and exit rates, it's actually been in decline, which means that people are moving jobs less and less since the 70s. And even in Europe, this is a trend as well. And this decline in creative destruction, I think, has a few forces. And the first is simply, you know, the status quo. You know, there are regulators that provide environmental and social protection for people and companies. You have bailouts, averting financial contagion, for example. And then you have regulatory capture that prevents new entrants from being able to enter and compete at the scale that the current large players are operating at. And you can see this with corporate concentration. The share of U.S. the U.S. economy dominated by the top 1% of companies by assets is now above 90%. In the 30s, that was only 70%. And so there's a lot of barriers to entry that these companies are starting to leverage. And part of that is, obviously, like I said, regulatory capture. But the big factor, I think, is actually lower interest rates. So for the last, you know, decade plus up until the last couple of years, interest rates, low interest rates and bailouts have kept companies afloat. Companies that were not very efficient and didn't offer what the market wanted. And these low interest rates allowed them to kick the can down the road and prevent bankruptcy, reorganization, and in some instances, liquidation. And now unprofitable companies in the Russell 2000 make up 40% versus only 15% 30 years ago. So higher interest rates and bankruptcies are actually a good thing for the economy longer term. Well, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and risk and how that relates to your overall goals and risk tolerance level by heading over to investdoc.com and clicking the portfolio review button. This is a free and confidential service. And if you need help with your 401k, we can help with that as well. Just start at investdoc.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestDoc. Good night.
InvestDoc is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.